Now, apparently, Northern Ireland workplaces are among the least ethical in the United Kingdom. Examples of sexual harassment, misusing company time, bullying, stealing from work are all widespread issues, according to the latest research. I find this almost impossible to believe, but let's speak to those who did the research. Unless workplaces are not like the workplace that I've been in for the past 20 years, because dignity at work has been very much to the fore in recent times. You tell me a company that employs any number of people that wouldn't have a dignity at work seminar every 12 months or so. We certainly have it here. Let me speak to Liz Hughes, who's associated with the survey from the Association of Chartered Certified Accountants. Liz, good morning.
Good morning, Frank.
Liz, this is a terribly negative reflection on workplaces in Northern Ireland. They seem to be rife with sexual harassment, misuse of company time, bullying, stealing from work, and people being forced in some ways to do things that would be obviously seen as lacking in an ethical approach.
Well, Frank, the survey was commissioned to coincide with the fourth annual Global Ethics Day. And what ACCA is calling for the business community to take time to consider the wider value of ethics for business and to set the tone from the top. Now, while you reference the fact that there are some of the, I suppose, some of the statistics from the research are quite shocking, I think one of the real takeout points is that 100% of those surveyed in Northern Ireland claim to act ethically in the workplace. But as you point out, this doesn't actually translate in practice. So as you note, misusing company time, bullying and harassment are issues that when people are pressed upon, they have actually said that there is an issue with these particular practices. So what we think and what we're calling for is there to be a much wider debate and education on the whole area of ethics. So it's not just about doing things right, it's about doing the right thing.
The definition of bullying, I'm sure down the years, without doubt, I'm actually old enough to probably remember it, whereby you had a loudmouth who was in charge, who just roared at you and put you in your box and, you know, you went away like a scalded cat. That sort of attitude existed in the workplace many, many years ago when people lived with a certain element of fear regarding a boss or a pretty touchy manager or someone who was just a pain in the backside. Those people did exist, but surely they've been rooted out of the workplace now. People we work for in this day and age in 2017 are vibrant, progressive, some of them relatively young. They've come through a different system. They're very aware of, as I say, dignity at work. This is 2017. It's not 1977, Liz.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I agree, Frank, and we've come an awful long way, and behaviour has improved significantly. But there are still issues in the workplace, and these have actually been demonstrated in the survey. So
how does bullying manifest itself now? Give me some examples of people being bullied. How they feel they're being bullied.
I think it's such a broad issue, Frank. It can be everything from, you know, having unrealistic time pressure put upon them to maybe somebody being excluded from, you know, social activity, being invited out for lunch, and to, you know, something that's much more active than, you know, just being ignored or not spoken. So it's so broad, and I think everybody has a different perspective on it. And there's been so much commentary about bullying and online bullying. So I think the nature of bullying is changing. It still exists, but it is changing. But what I do agree with is that organisations are just taking this much more seriously. They're setting policies and procedures in place to protect their employees, because every employee is entitled to a safe place to work where they feel that they can be productive and contribute to their organisation.
And are women more vulnerable in the workplace than men in 2017?
Well, I think the evidence from this survey didn't particularly look at the differences in gender, but I would say that both sexes experience different forms of bullying.
Well, we also touch on sexual harassment. That's part of the survey as well. So would women be primarily the victims of sexual harassment?
I think, you know, based on what we've seen, just to note, Frank, that this survey actually took place towards the end of September. So the recent stories in the media hadn't necessarily broken, and those stories relate specifically to, well, there's an awful lot more women who have been impacted. But the one thing that I would say is that sexual harassment is never acceptable. And as I noted, some of the recent stories in the media are absolutely shocking. But the one thing that has come out of this is that it's really encouraging to see individuals reporting such incidents. And it's only by raising awareness and tackling these issues head on will attitudes and culture change. And ACCA is calling for, you know, the heart of culture to be effective communications and strong leadership, and actually putting ethics at the top of the agenda, and actually setting the tone from the top, and for it to go throughout the entire organisation. And that's why, as I mentioned, today is our fourth annual Global Ethics Day. But what ACCA have done is that we've launched an enhanced ethics and professional skills module to equip our members with the professional skills that they need to, you know, to deal with the ever complex issues in the workplace. And we were the first professional body to introduce a mandatory ethics module back in 2007, and this has been enhanced for 2017. So we are very, very aware that ethics is a significant issue. It has to be taken very, very seriously, and we want to make sure that ACCA equips our members with the skills to handle such issues.
And the example of sexual harassment, which is one of the four or five bullet points here, is this to be defined within the mind of the person on the receiving end? For example, if a woman comes into an office and someone says to her, your hair's fabulous, if she feels that's sexual harassment, it is sexual harassment.
I don't necessarily want to get into the nuances of that particular point, but what I would say to anybody who...
Yeah, but it's definition. What is sexual harassment? Because there seems to be many examples of it. We absolutely know what Harvey Weinstein does is sexual harassment and beyond. If someone comes up behind a person in an office and starts massaging their shoulders, that is obviously sexual harassment, unless the person has clearly invited the other person to come over to do it. But at what point does it stop being sexual harassment? Is it because some women do feel a compliment is sexual harassment?
I think it's a very, very personal thing, Frank.
So therefore, so it's in the mind of the person on the receiving end.
It is. If a woman or a man feels uncomfortable by, you know, by certain behaviour that they've experienced, I think it's important that in the first instance that they confide in somebody that they trust. And if they feel, you know, upon having done that, they feel it's still an issue, that they report the issue to their manager or HR department. Just to get clarity on that, because your HR department can actually advise you on how best to tackle such issues. And if there is a question around somebody's behaviour and somebody is made feel uncomfortable, then that person should absolutely be held to account.
There's usually some form of warning system, isn't there? First of all, there'd be guidelines. Any company worth its salt will have guidelines. Second, Yeah. You've touched on it there. If you feel uncomfortable, you speak to a line manager, or if it's the line manager who's giving you the hassle, you speak to the human resources department. A very quiet word from the human resources department towards the person who, for example, has given the compliment would allow that compliment giver to know that compliments aren't welcome with this particular person and they should not be given. If the next day you then compliment the person again, well, you're obviously breaking the rules at this point.
Yeah, well, I think the thing is that, you know, when you're looking at how to manage these things, performance management is hugely important. And, you know, that ties in with an open and honest culture. So if you've a performance management process in place, if you have honest and open communications with your organisation, and you clearly set out what is expected from your employees, what sort of behaviours are acceptable, what sort of culture you want to instill within that organisation. An individual should feel very confident about following those procedures to ensure that their issues or grievances are heard.
There's just a couple of other bullet points. I'll do them very quickly. One of them is stealing from work. If you're taking home an ink cartridge for your printer at home, that is clearly stealing from work. If, however, you end up going home with one of the company pencils in your back pocket because you've been using it, that's hardly stealing. So there's got to be a common sense element to it. Do you agree with me on that one?
I would agree with you that there should be a common sense approach. But the thing is that, you know, company property is company property, and you know, nobody should be taking home company property to their home place.
We have pencils here. I can see one sitting beside me that has U105 written on it. They're meant to be given to listeners, and of course they can be. But if I end up, you know, having my child do her homework with that tomorrow night, have I stolen it?
Well, sure, you're doing a good bit of branding for U105 if your daughter brings it into school, so I think that one would pass.
Yeah, you see, this is the point. Some things that don't belong to you, you can take with you. So you should know what's acceptable and what isn't acceptable. I think the ink cartridge for the printer is a very, very good example. Liz, one final one. It's got to do with misuse of company time. We all do it at some point. We all ring our granny during work and have a conversation with her for 10 minutes. Minutes, we technically shouldn't be doing it. How easy is misuse of company time to control?
Well, I think again that's something that should be discussed at organisational level. For example, in certain organisations, a personal phone call, you know, once a day is absolutely permitted. But you know, I think it's that common sense point. You don't abuse that privilege that you've been given. So you ensure that, you know, if you are making a personal phone call, that you keep it short. You're in the workplace to work. But if there's an issue, and if there's a case that, you know, you need a little bit of extra personal time, again, speak to your line manager. Let them know what's happening and give them the opportunity to support you. I think that's really, really important.
There's a lot of good advice in there, Liz. It's an interesting survey. It's an important one, and it's a reminder for all employers and all employees that it is a relevant issue. Ethics in the workplace and people being comfortable in their place of work. Thanks for speaking to us this morning.
Thanks very much, Frank.
That's Liz Hughes, the head of the Association of Chartered Certified Accountants. Now, their workplace has carried out the survey, but it's relevant to it is relevant to us all. To us all. I want to speak to Fiona Meredith about this, and I'm going to do that in a moment. And I'm also going to put the spotlight on a new policy of all places in France, which would be very relevant to this too.
The Frank Mitchell phone-in on U105. Listening to you.
A question for you this morning: is sexual harassment still to the fore in workplaces in Northern Ireland? Fiona Meredith is available to speak to us. She's a writer and a journalist. Fiona, good morning.
Morning, Frank.
What's your definition? Because you write about this a lot. What's your definition of sexual harassment at work?
Well, it's really hard to define, isn't it? Because everybody seems to have a different definition. And as you were saying in your previous conversation with Liz, I mean, there's the really obvious stuff. Like, you know, I use the example of Harvey Weinstein. I mean, and that of course goes beyond harassment, way beyond, clearly. But so there's the extreme end. But then there's the borderline stuff. Like, as you say, you know, does a male employee admire a female employee's hair? Is that harassment? And I suppose what you're going to say is each case must be judged on individual merits and understood individually. But, you know, I think there's no doubt that in many ways, like, Northern Ireland is the land that time forgot in some respects. We all know that. And one of those things is attitudes to women. And there's a lot of people out there, I'm not saying all, but there's still a fair number of people out there that have pretty disrespectful attitudes to women.
I'm searching through my mind here in the workplace to see any examples of that, however. And maybe it's because this very establishment, I don't mean UTV, I mean broadcasting, I mean the media, addressed it many years ago when there would have been the Playboy-type attitude and guys would have seen the girls as fluff, really, and that was a term that was used. My goodness me, there's been a journey over the last two decades or more. And I see equality all around me, but I still see, and hear, banter. And some of the banter, of course, can be coming from the girls every bit as much as it comes comes from the fellas. But you will definitely get compliments delivered all roads and directions. And I personally think everyone is comfortable with that. I've never seen anyone react in an uncomfortable way. But occasionally, we will have what I would describe as the unwelcome masseur. And, you know, there's something very creepy about a person who comes up behind any member of staff, whether it's a female coming up behind a male, or a male coming up behind a female, or male and male, female and female. Once that massaging of the shoulders starts while they're talking to you, they may say, oh, but, you know, I have this therapeutic. I actually think it's a bit creepy.
I think it's a bit creepy too. And I think it's just, you know, you're moving then into the zone of physically touching someone, and that's unsolicited. The person didn't say, oh, would you mind giving my shoulders a rub? You know, this is unsolicited attention, and that's where you do get into these areas, which, you know, very well may constitute harassment. But I was just thinking there too, you know, yes, of course, we've come on a big journey in terms of equality. I don't think we're there yet, but there's definitely been huge amounts of progress. But just to give you an example, I can't count the amount of times that I have been on a phone-in show, for example, and someone has phoned in and referred to me as that wee girl. Right, I'm 44 years old. I'm highly educated. I am not a wee girl. But you get that kind of mentality out there. Now, that doesn't mean that person indulges in sexual harassment. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying it's symptomatic of a wider cultural view of women. And not everyone would use that phrase. Most people wouldn't. But there's a fair few people out there who still do. So there's a generational aspect to this as well.
You're right on that. There's sometimes an element of people who would be describing women in terms that are not, I suppose, seen as the way they would describe a fella. And maybe I should say a man. We should call them men, men and women, because women don't particularly like being called girls. They don't want to be called ladies. They don't want to be called anything else. I have a long conversation with a relative of mine who actually would be quite an outspoken feminist, and she would be saying, call us women, call yourself a man. That's all we want to be called.
It's pretty straightforward, really.
but having said that, is that just trying to sanitize life? You know, what's wrong with conversational tones that say, okay, wee woman down the street, or that young lady that was on the radio with Frank earlier on, you find it as demeaning?
Well, it all depends on context, doesn't it? Because, you know, you do have a situation where, you know, women will talk about going out with the girls, blokes will talk about going out with the lads, you know. So it does depend on the context. But in the situation I was talking about, if I'm speaking on a certain subject and someone phones in and calls me a wee girl, what the effect of that is to do is to kind of undermine my authority on that subject. And I know I am far from alone on this. This is something I've talked about with other colleagues who've experienced exactly the same thing. So there's a problem with sort of taking women seriously in some cases. And I think that's the kind of climate that can lead to inappropriate behaviour.
Do you think women are still disadvantaged sometimes in the office environment? For example, if an incredibly good-looking young woman comes in, could she be disadvantaged because people around her, males around her, think, she's very good looking, but we don't want to be looking at her in here. She, you know, that's, we look at her in the nightclub or wherever else, the swimming baths or wherever we see her. But if she's here, she's going to be a distraction. So they tend to distance themselves from her. Or indeed, if they are the manager, they avoid giving her a central role because she is, for want of a better term, a distraction.
Yeah, it's a difficult one because people are human, and, you know, we can all recognise that we think someone's good looking, but it doesn't. The key thing is you don't act on it, you know. And as you say, there may be subtle ways that are impossible actually to control or police that people are affected by the perceived attractiveness of a colleague. But I think the key thing you've got to come back to is you can't act on it overtly. You know, that's just clearly wrong.
Because, you know, as I say, they've eradicated, I suppose, these issues from this building many decades ago, and it's partly down to ongoing dignity at work training, which we all embrace. Having said that, you know, I am very aware of people in the building who are particularly good looking. And a couple of them happened to be males. And I've heard girls in the canteen, in the corridor.
Girls, Frank.
Exactly, that I've fallen foul of the golden rule. I have heard women, but to me, they're all so young, they're girls, right? But I have heard women in the corridor, in the canteen, and I'm going to give these two guys, new names. I'll not call them by their real names, okay? I'm going to call them Steve and Guy. They're not their real names, okay?
Okay.
I've heard women in the corridor say, "Gosh, Steve, have you seen Steve up in IT?" Or, you know, "Guy, he works in the radio. Have you seen Guy?" There's that sort of talk from females. Whereas, sure, you know, we can't say that about Debbie and Julie.
But you could have that conversation with your male friends about that. If it's a private conversation, say, you know, I don't think...
But I'm overhearing it. I'm third party. Should I be offended?
Personally, no, I don't think so. On either side, I say we're human beings, for goodness sake. And when it comes to the workplace, yes, there are certain rules that we have to stick to just to make the whole thing workable. But, you know, people will always have private conversations with their colleagues. And, I mean, you can't police that, and nor should you, you know. But so I don't think that's anything to worry about. It's when it's to translate into actual behaviour and action, and unwanted behaviour and unwanted actions. But, I mean, truly, a bit of banter, you know, as long as no one's getting hurt by it, that would be the thing.
Yeah, and third-party offence is a relevant thing, because if someone goes, they overhear it, they go to HR, maybe
yeah,
you need to be called aside for that as well. We've got to be sensitive to people's feelings. Getting back to the main thrust of this, Fionnuala, what do you say to a young woman or a young man or a person of any age who may be listening to this programme who feels uncomfortable in their workplace? They've been feeling uncomfortable for maybe months now and they really don't have the confidence to address it. What's your advice to them?
Well, I think you've just got to pluck up that confidence and speak to your manager. You obviously don't need to address the person who's doing it, unless it is the manager, and then you go, of course, go on up the tree, you know, to someone in a further position of authority. But, you know, absolutely don't tolerate it. We do live in 2017. There are laws, and there is no way that anyone should have to put up with that kind of stuff.
Jeff has sent me a text here, because I often refer to you, when we've spoken to you before, as being a feminist. I don't think I called you a feminist this morning, but you're described here by Jeff. Fionnuala Meredith, the feminist, is on the radio. Could you ask her to define what a feminist is?
Well, from my point of view, it's just about equal opportunities for women, that women just are open to and able to get exactly the same things as men. It's not about hating men. To be honest, I use the term less and less, not because I'm any less of a feminist, but just because people misinterpret so often. They think you're some kind of man-hating, you know, harpy monster woman, and that, you know, you're scary and weird. I'm not any of those things. But I do feel strongly that, you know, women's authority needs to be recognised. So for me, that's what it's about. So I hope that definition will suffice.
I think it will. And this survey that we were talking about at the top of the programme, which has been carried out by the Association of Chartered Certified Accountants in relation to human resources, we had Liz Hughes on. She made the very good point that all the answers that came through on the survey were before the Harvey Weinstein controversy. And he, in the way that he has behaved over the last number of decades, going by the accusations that are against him, is a shame to mankind. But the reality is, he is not alone. There are other men, maybe of that age, maybe of that era, who really should be ashamed of how they've led their lives.
Well, I think there's probably a fair few small town Harvey Weinsteins out there, you know, not with the profile or the power that he has, but actually power is the word, and it can happen in, you know, it can happen anywhere. When there's a power dynamic where someone, perhaps a man, has authority over someone else, perhaps a woman, then, you know, there is the potential there for difficulty for that woman. And we've just got to keep our eyes out for it and not tolerate it where we see it.
Fionnuala, always good speaking to you. Thanks for coming on. Thank you. Thank you.
Frank.
That is Fionnuala Meredith. She is the commentator. She is the writer. She is the journalist. She is many things. And indeed, she's making a series of different points. I would like your opinions and maybe your stories. I don't want names. Obviously, I don't want names. But what you've been through in the workplace, or maybe what you've witnessed in the workplace, or how you got it addressed if you did have something to face. Now, I don't want names, but I would like scenarios. Do give us a ring, 90 333 105. And is it possible, is it really possible for a guy to be sexually harassed at work by a female? I'm quite sure there are guys who are sexually harassed at work by other guys, but is it possible for a fella to be harassed by a female? I'd like your opinions on that as well.